Shalom, everyone. My name is Sanabu Drabel, Yasub Lena Hawkins, and I like to say her forever as a breeze starting very soon. It's now time to start firing your seats for services. Can I have your attention, please? Can I have your attention, please? Shalom, everyone. My name is Sanabu Drabel, Shalom Hawkins. I'd like to serve forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Yidja Label and honor to in the sanctuary. I'd like to turn it over to Sanabu Drabel, Michelle Yah.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. The title of my speech is The Two Trees Explained by Yeshua. There were two trees in the Garden of Eden. One was the way of life. The other was the tree of mixture of righteousness and evil that brought death. Please turn over to Genesis 2:9 found on page 2. And out of the ground Yahweh made every tree grow that is pleasant to his sight, desirable for food. The tree of life was in the midst of the ground. And the tree of the knowledge of righteousness and evil was in the midst also. One was the way of life and the other was the works of Satan's teachings, to be evil like the gods, not following Yahweh's righteousness. The 16th book of Yeshua, chapter 5, verse 73. Well, here in Genesis 2:9, to make man in his image, he sent up two trees, not just but one, but two houses. Here you see two houses. There that you see one is the tree of life, the tree of life. He allows the tree of evil like the gods as is brought forth in Genesis 3:5. Satan says, do this, be evil like the gods. It is more desirable than Yahweh said. Then they will follow Satan. He shows that Yeshua explained two trees for him. Please turn to Matthew 7:18, found on page 733. Likewise, every righteous tree brings forth righteous fruit, but a tree of evil brings forth fruit of iniquity. A righteous tree cannot bring forth fruit of iniquity, nor can a tree of evil bring forth fruit of righteousness. Only the tree of life will bring forth righteous fruit, and that is the house of Yahweh. Anyone not a part of Yahweh's house is a part of the tree of righteousness and evil. follows the way of the gods. Yahweh sent our pastor Israel Hawkins to teach us righteousness, and if we follow him, we will live. Yahweh bless your understanding, and now I can turn over to the next speaker.
Shalom once again. At this time, we'll turn the services over to the great deacon, Azariah Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom. You can be seated. I hope all is well and that the peace of Yahweh is with each and every one of you. The title of my speech is The Mindset We Ought to Have. And what I aim to do is to show how the Yematria is not only fitting for prophecy, it's also fitting to inspire us to follow an example of humility, which is needed to be in unity with Yahweh, Yahshua, pastor, each other. I'm going to start out with two short definitions of the mindset that I'm referring to. It states, in the Free Dictionary, which I found online, it states, the mindset is a fixed mental attitude or disposition that predetermines a person's response to and interpretations of situations. The source of the second definition I found on the World English Dictionary, which states, mindset is the ideas and attitudes with which a person approaches a situation, especially when these are seen as difficult to alter. Now that we have a better understanding of the mindset I'm referring to, I want us to examine the fixed mental attitude and disposition that this woman of Canaan had in setting her mind in advance in interpreting her experience with Yahshua. She set one of the best examples of humility that I've read, that we need to be in unity with Yahweh and Yahshua and each other and pastor. I'll be reading from the book of Yahweh, Matitya 15:21-28, and it states, then Yahshua left there and went into the region of Tyre and Sidon. Then, and behold, a woman of Canaan came out from that region and cried out to him, saying, have mercy on me, O ruler, son of David. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. But he did not speak a word to her. Then his disciples came to him and said, send her away, for she is crying out behind us. But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then she came and worshipped him, saying, ruler, help me. But he answered and said, it's not right to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs. And she said, true, ruler, but the dogs eat those crumbs which falls from their owner's table. You know, this is one of the most fascinating and profound statements of humility that I've read in the scriptures. Moving on to 28, then Yahshua answered and said to her, O woman, great is your faith. May it be to you as you requested. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. I want us to pay attention to that footnote, W1. It states faith, the reliance on the power and righteousness of Yahweh. You know, do we learn to rely on the power of the righteousness of Yahweh overnight? Is this something that occurs in one instance, or does it take time, counseling, practicing, teaching, studying? This woman, like many of us, came out of the defiled world suffering from Christianity. But through her reliance on the power and righteousness of Yahweh and allowing the teachings, the crumbs from the bread of life to form her mindset, she was granted her request. She was willing to humble herself, maintain the right mindset, and believe into the one sent. How much more Yahweh's children who eat before him at his table? Moving on to the strongest of strongs, which is this right here. This is what I use right here, the strongest of strongs. we can see this word crumbs that this woman of Canaan was seeking, this word 5589. I'd love you to see that. 5589. That's the word for crumbs. And the Greek is pronounced pisicion, crumb, very small, piece, crumbs. I thought to myself, you know, that's a pretty intriguing word right there. So I loaded that up into your matrix, as you can see right here. Pisicion, which is crumbs, and the first number is 269, which can be seen on that slide right there. And it means peaceable. See right there? Peaceable, not quarrelsome, without conflict, not a brawler, not a brawler. You know, I don't know too many problems that can't be solved by being peaceable, being humble. Because when we have peace within ourselves, we no longer seek to change the person or the situation. We seek to change the inner feelings and emotions and the thoughts that they stimulate. So the crumbs that this woman was seeking from our table was simply the Peace Solution Character Education Program that has ability to change the heart and the mind. It was the teachers from the one sent at that time, Yahshua Messiah, as it is in this time, being the teacher, Yisrael Hawkins, who forms and shapes our mindset. 269 in the Hebrew right here. It means sister. Remember this number, 269, comes from us typing in a woman of Canaan in the Yamatria, and it gave us this 269, which means sisters. Is this the example of one of our sisters that we should follow? Is it just for the women to follow? 269 leads us to 251, which also means brother. By extension, family, kinsman, relative, a term of endearment, anyone of the same race, a large social group, countrymen, association, each to his brother. And when I read that, it came to mind the scripture, 1 Keeper 3:8, which states, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, full of brotherly love, sympathetic and courteous. You can actually see this being carried out, this scripture right here. You can actually see this scripture being carried out by Yahshua and this woman of Canaan, who was a God worshiper, who was willing to repent, submit, and humble herself to the one sent, being of one mind to have this compassion, love, and sympathy extended to her. This should give us hope and great joy, knowing that we can be forgiven, reconciled, and converted to get our prayers answered. Moving on to the next number in the year matrix, which is 558. You can see that 558. It means amaze y'all, which is pretty cool. I thought it was pretty cool. Yahweh is powerful. Amaze y'all. And then it leads us to 557, which means Yahweh is my strength, which ultimately leads us to this 553, which means to be strong, courageous, strength, support. This is some of the qualities that this particular woman exhibited. Established, hardened, strengthened, strong, made abstinent, steadfastly minded. You see that right there? This is what she was. She was determined. She was steadfastly minded and facing a difficult situation. We are to follow this woman's example with the intent of allowing it to contribute to the forming of our mindset, the mindset we ought to have. In closing, I wanted to know who was this woman of Canaan. So I typed that in as well in the matrix, a woman of Canaan, and it led me to this word right here, 1164, which means example. So this woman of Canaan typed into the matrix, led to 1164, and this led to example. The example that we should follow. So my main point is simple. Let us strive to follow this example of humility, determination, and persistence that this woman of Canaan had to keep our thoughts pure, positive, and righteous. I want to close with one last scripture. It's Philippians 4:8. This scripture in Philippians 4:8 states, "Finally, brothers, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of righteous report, if there is any virtue and if there is any praise, think on these things. Because we are not what we think we are, but what we think that we are." Let us give our efforts to developing this righteous mindset of humility, to be in unity with Yahweh, Yahshua, Pastor, and each other, to make it into the kingdom. With that, I want to turn it over to the great Deacon Emmanuel.
Praise Yahweh. Praise Yahweh. Shalom, everybody. You can be seated. Yahweh's peace be with each and every one of you. You know, after a sermon like that yesterday, I mean, how can you follow that? I mean, that was awesome stuff right there that Pastor brought out. You know, keep in mind the theme for this feast, right? Granted, linen, righteousness. Okay, it was granted to us in this last time right now to be granted to be worn this fine linen. Okay? I don't want nobody to take that lightly right now, you know, because, you know, you can sometimes, another theme of the feast and everything like that, we can get really, really complacent. But keep in mind how important this is right now, at this point in time, to be granted to be worn this fine linen, okay? Let me show you something here about granted here. From a legal dictionary online, the word granted: to confer, give, or bestow a gift of legal rights or privilege or a recognition of asserted rights, a synonym, acknowledgement, allotment, allowance, gratuity, reward, confer a privilege, give consent, let, give permission. It's a comprehensive term that encompasses more specific words of transfer, such as assign and devise. So basically, you know, where Yahweh is about to put his name on the dotted line for our adoption papers. Remember about the adoption. That's very important. When you look at those laws about adoption, we're being adopted. And we're going to be a part of the immediate family of Yahweh. But let me ask you a question, okay? What are you willing to go through or give up to have your signal go before Yahweh and Yahshua for all eternity? What are you willing to give up for that, to keep this going? If you turn over to Colossians chapter 3, verse 12 and 13. The title of my sermon is Long-Suffering is Food for the Heart. Sometimes we get so caught up in what's going on right here and right now, and we forget that long-suffering is the method by Yahweh which teaches us this character. That's the method. That's the way of means that he chose to teach us this, how to get along with one another. And sometimes we're going to be upset with one another, of course. No unity in departments and stuff like that, but how are we going to work? How are we going to work with it? Verse 12 says, "Therefore, as the elect of Yahweh, the elect, holy and beloved, put on compassion, humbleness of mind, meekness," notice that, "long suffering, be patient with one another, and forgiving, please one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, just as Messiah forgave you, you also must." This long suffering, let's take a look at it. "To be of long spirited, not lose heart, to persevere patiently and bravely in enduring setbacks and troubles." This is what we're actually here for, aren't we? Aren't we here to learn how to deal with setbacks and troubles? We're here for these things. We're here to learn how to tolerate one another, how to tolerate, and also how to work and get the job done. Okay? So it says to be patient in bearing the offenses and injuries of others, to be mild and slow in avenging, to be long-suffering, to slow to anger, slow to punish, to defer anger. And that defer, from Webster's Merriam, says postpone, delay in action. It implies a deliberate, now, notice this, okay, it's deliberate putting off of a later time. In other words, putting it off for a later time. Proverbs chapter 16:32, check it out. He who is slow to anger, right, basically patient, is better than a warrior. He who rules his spirit is better than one who captures a city. You know, we're not going to be given a share. I need to read this right quick here. It says, we're not going to be given a share in ruling the universe and all of Yahweh's creation until we learn to rule ourselves. Here, let me just show it to you. Okay, look. Until we learn to keep ourselves and our thoughts, words, and actions within the boundaries of Yahweh's law. Right? Within the boundaries of Yahweh's law. Think law. Think, how am I supposed to respond to this situation right here? Am I going to get mad at this person? No. No. We're not going to get mad. Ecclesiastics. Have a look at this one. The end of something, right, is better than its beginning. And the patient, you could put long-suffering there. That's basically what I'm saying. Long-suffering in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not become easily angered. For notice this last part right here. For anger rests in the bosom of fools. So you're in the same category as not believing all the prophets there. I don't want to be in that. You know, I don't want to be in the same category of not believing everything that pastor has spoken in these last days. You know, this is how really important it is. It's absolutely important that we really get this frequency going in between ourselves individually. But think how awesome it would be if all of us as a family had our frequency going up to the heavens. I mean, I bet you I wouldn't be surprised, and I could be wrong. Don't quote me on it, okay? But I bet you that if that took place, the heavens would respond. They would really respond. Because I feel in my heart, and I'm not going to put my head on the chopping block for that, but I do feel that disunity in departments, disunity within ourselves, I think it really doesn't need to be there. Because as long as pastor has been speaking, he's always been hitting on this, how important it is for us to come into unity. They always say he's going to prove unity, right? So that means he's going to show us and prove to us that coming into unity with the way that he lives his life is the best for us also. But here's the thing, though. Why does the creator of everything that we know to exist have to go to such extremes for that? Why does he have to go to such extremes for that? Yeah, I do understand that there's Satan involved and everything like that, you know, but, you know, sometimes you just got to sit back and we got to think about stuff for a minute. Let's go to Luke right quick. Now, this is Yahshua speaking here, okay? But what are we willing to give up? You know, being upset with anybody is not going to increase our frequency. What are we willing to give up? Are we going to be able to give up companionship? Families? What are we willing to give up for this? And what I mean by this is keeping our frequency, keeping our contact with Yahweh. Okay, so look. If any man comes to me and does not love me more than his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brother, his sister, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. I can't recognize that frequency right there. That seems to be a selfish frequency right there. I'm not going to be able to, the vibration don't seem right, you know? Don't seem right. Not of my house. My house is selfless. My house, my family, my adopted sons put others' needs before their needs. And we're not saying that nobody's done that here. Look at 1 Kefa real quick. I'm running out of time here. 1 Kefa chapter 2, 19, 20, and 21 and 23. For it is commendable if a man bears up under pain of unjust suffering, because he is conscious of Yahweh. Now, what glory is it if you receive a beating for doing wrong? That's not only a beating, you know, getting a whipping, but also with your tongue. And you endure it. But if you suffer for doing righteousness and you endure it, it is commendable before Yahweh. Right? For to this you are called. Notice this, okay? Notice it. To do righteousness, of course, modest. Messiah also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Here's another one. Who, when he was, if you remember what I said, what I brought out about reviling, it means criticized in an angrily manner, right? When he was criticized in an angry and abusive manner, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously, right? This is what we need to do also. You know, when some things in our life take place, you know, we think about it and we're like, man, is this ever going to end? Sometimes I think that. You know, I used to think about the tests and the trials were like such a like, oh man, I don't want to go through this. But 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 17 and 18 is for light and momentary afflictions are achieving for us a far more exceedingly and eternal weight of glory. So we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. We don't look at the things that are seen, but we look at the things that are seen. Wait a minute. We don't look at the things that are seen, but we look at the things that are not seen. Sorry. But look at this right here. For the things which are seen are temporary. So we're only going through this just for a little while. Why? So we can learn what we need to do to bring peace to the nations and the universe. We have to learn this experience of the gods so we can show people that this is not what we want. And here's what we need to do to fix it. Okay? Everything we are going through has been carefully designed by Yahweh to prove that we can prove ourselves to Yahweh. So we need to prove ourselves to Yahweh, right? We need to prove ourselves. Okay, in closing, Colossians chapter 1, verse 11. Strengthened with all might according to his glorious power for all patience and long-suffering. Notice how you're supposed to do it. With joy. We'll put a smile on your face. Put a smile on your face. Go like, hey, all right. Put a smile on your face when you're going through these things, okay? All right. Y'all please stand. I'm going to turn it over to the great Deacon David. Shalom, everybody.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. Boy, Yahweh is awesome and merciful, just like our beloved overseer, Israel Hawkins. Very merciful. I want you to think about something while we talk about a few things here, and it's opportunity. Opportunity knocks, all right? Turn to Genesis 6:14, please, on page 5. Genesis 6:14. Noah was given a job to do. This opportunity was knocking. Yahweh told him to make yourself an ark of gopher wood, that's cypress, and make rooms in the ark, cover it inside and outside with pitch, and this is how you should make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, or 400 feet long. 450 feet long? 75 feet wide? And 45 feet high? That sounds like a huge task, doesn't it? But let's see what Noah did. In fact, Yahweh told him also, hey, also I want you to fill this thing with every living thing of all flesh. You shall bring two of every species into the ark, and they shall be male and female. And then verse 21, it says, and you shall take for yourself of all food that is eaten, you shall gather this to yourself, and it shall be food for you and them. I mean, these are some awesome big tasks or opportunities. Look at what, in 6:22, look what Noah did. Thus Noah did according to all that Yahweh commanded him, so he did. So Noah got out there and did it. He jumped right on it and went to work. Let's look at another. Let's turn to Exodus 3. Go to page 46, Exodus 3. Verse 10 and 11. So Yahweh had a job for Moshe. And so here it is, you know, the opportunity's knocking. Come now, go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Moshe said to Yahweh, oh, Yahweh, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Of course, this is after a while where he had been had time to work and become very humble. And so then Yahweh saw, okay, I can use him to do this. And so, of course, Yahweh said, well, don't worry about it. Here's what you do. And he told him what to say and do. And so a little more instruction comes. And, of course, Moshe was asking, how do I do this from this time? So then if you look at chapter 4, the first verse, it says, then Moshe answered and said, well, what if they don't believe me, Yahweh, or listen to me? Suppose they say, well, Yahweh hasn't appeared to you. Well, so he gets some more instruction. So he's thinking these things out a little bit, you know, and wondering, well, if this occurs and that occurs. Well, so let's look at verse 10 then. And so after all this instruction and all, Moshe said to Yahweh, Yahweh, I've never been an eloquent teacher, not in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and slow of tongue. And Yahweh said to him, now, don't worry. You know, who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Isn't it I, Yahweh? Now, go ahead. I'll help you. I'll teach you what you need to say. Instead, Moshe said, oh, Yahweh, please send someone else to do this job. I mean, you know, going before Pharaoh, getting all these people out of Egypt. Come on. This is huge. So Yahweh comes back again and says, okay, well, let me tell you what you do. This is how we're going to work this out, okay? And so there was a little bit of lack of confidence there, but Yahweh reassured Moshe, and what did he do? He went and did the job, didn't he? Okay, let's look at another one. Go ahead and turn to page 702. Page 702. And this is Yana, and I'm sure everybody's pretty familiar with this story, but if you look at Yana 1 and 2, or Yana 2, Yana 1, verse 2, I'm sorry. Yahweh said, rise up and go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But what did Yonah do? Yonah rose up to flee to Tarshish, away from the presence of Yahweh. Now, see, he had something in his mind, right? Which, if you know the whole story, you already know, you know, where this is going. But he fled from the presence of Yahweh. He went down to Yafo and found a ship going to Tarshish. And so he paid the fare and went on the ship. And he went away with him from being in the presence of Yahweh. And so some things came up on the ship and the other men on the ship and all this turmoil and everything. And so eventually what occurred was Yonah said, yeah, it's me. You know, just throw me overboard and everything's going to be fine. You know, you guys can be on your way. And so we know what occurred there, you know, the fish, and Yonah was swallowed by the fish. And then he had some second thoughts about the whole deal. And so then the word of Yahweh came to Yonah the second time. And he said, rise up and go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach against it the message that I tell you. So Yonah rose up and went to Nineveh. Now, Yahweh's very merciful to give him another opportunity to do this. But he went up and he went to Nineveh and he did what Yahweh told him to do. And he took his group and he preached and published throughout this city. And a huge city is what it was. And of course, the people turned and repented, at least for the time being. So then, of course, you look at verse 10 in chapter 3, and it says, "Then Yahweh saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and Yahweh relented of the destruction that he said that would be brought upon them." He protected them from this destruction that was coming upon them, that they brought upon themselves. You know, look at chapter 4, Yana was pretty displeased. He prayed to Yahweh and said, "Yahweh, isn't this what I said when I was yet in my country? You know, you told me to go here, and this is why I fled before. I knew you were compassionate and merciful, Father Yahweh, slow to anger, great kindness, merciful, who relents from this calamity being sent." And so, you know, he was telling Yahweh, "Just take my life. Just, you know, just get me out of here. These people hate me. They want to kill me, you know." Well, so Yana, at the beginning, you know, he had some thoughts building. You ever heard this saying, building a mountain out of a molehill? You ever heard that? Yeah, most of us have, and it means that, okay, well, here's this little molehill here that we got to get over, and we start looking at it and saying, yeah, but what if I do this, and what if I do that? No, maybe I need to go do this first, you know? Well, so he was a bit worried about this persecution that would come up on him from the people saying, "Well, you said it was going to be destroyed. It wasn't destroyed." Well, haven't we heard some of that in the last days here too? Didn't Pastor do the same thing? Not the same thing as far as not going and doing the work right away. No, Pastor goes immediately. Israel Hawkins is a man of action. I can tell you that. He goes and does it right then. And he does it right though. Yahweh's guiding him. Let's look at that. Okay, well, so here's Pastor. Here's the last days, you know, here's all this stuff going on. You know, the knowledge is we're in that last generation where the knowledge has been increased. The nuclear bombs are out there and everything. And Pastor's reading in Zechariah 5, and, you know, he looks at that and says, okay, and this is after, well, let's talk about Revelation 11 first. You know, Revelation 11, of course, one of the jobs of the two witnesses, it says, go and measure the temple. Well, what temple, you know? Which temple am I going to go measure? You know, but he didn't, he asked Yahweh for the guidance, and Yahweh guided him on where to go and what to do. It didn't take place overnight, but he's a man of action. He got on it. He started making the plans to do it, and he didn't let anything get in the way, and he did exactly what Yahweh said he was going to do and that Yahweh sent him to do. You know, opportunity knocked, and Israel Hawkins took hold of it. And then you look at Zechariah 5, and he's looking there, and he says, you know, it says, build this house of Yahweh, build it in Shinar? Well, where's Shinar? Well, so he starts looking, and he finds all these great, all this great wisdom that he now shares with us, too. And Yahweh gave Pastor this guidance, and he knew that Pastor would take hold of these things and do it. Just like he said in Isaiah, you know, who's going to preach this message? Who's going to do these things as I would? Who's going to do this in these last days? Well, he could have at any time looked at these jobs that he had to do and said, oh, this is too much. We just can't do it. I don't have any people. I don't have, you know, we don't have this. We don't have that. And made all these excuses, but he didn't. And Yahweh assured him, you know, he said, you're going to suffer some reproaches, but don't worry about it. He said, you know, don't fear or be afraid in Isaiah 44. I got your back. In fact, I'll open the doors for you. And so, again, Pastor being the man of action, and when what we all know, he tells us all the time, is to hurry and work. He got on it and went and did the job. Well, so opportunity knocks for us too. Have you ever been given a task? You know, opportunity, task, opportunity. You ever been given that opportunity that you thought, well, how am I going to go do that? Is he serious? You mean all that today? Well, we don't have a big enough truck. We don't have a big enough car, big enough tractor, big enough oven, big enough. I mean, you know, fill in the blank, okay? You can start building all this in your mind of the reasons why we can't accept that opportunity. And it all comes down to attitude. We have to have that attitude of servitude. Now, we want to be a man of action like Israel Hawkins, and like Father Yahweh, of course. But we want to take that action with instruction. We want to take that right action, you know. Recently, I think we all had an opportunity to hear that opportunity knocking when Pastor said, well, we need to have these linen suits ready by feast, you know, something like that. And it was like, oh, okay. Well, you know, it's a big, awesome task, but people got on it right away. They got on it and took the right action like Pastor said to do, and we had a few changes along the way, but look, we're almost there. And he's already said, you know, don't worry, we'll be ready for the feast that this is really, really needed real bad. You know, we'll all be ready, okay? So think of some of the other things, you know. Well, we need to extend this parking lot. We need a certification class. We need to pave this parking lot. We need to write this book about unveiling Satan. You know, we need a men's kitchen. We need food available at the back of the sanctuary. You know, all these things are opportunity knocking, and people took hold of that opportunity and asked what to do, and they went and did it. You know, we could get bogged down in this thought. And all these things can fail with all this planning. You know, but remember this, an idea put into action is better than, even though it may be incomplete, it's better than a complete idea never even acted upon. Remember, Yahweh's plan is perfect. So I want to say this, though. You know, putting off taking this action is actually procrastination. There's many examples in Scripture of procrastination. We don't have time to go through all of them right now. But, you know, the work has been hurt and slowed down before because of procrastination. But then someone came along that was a man of action and got the job done. And that's what, and we can all turn into that person that gets the job done, that accepts that opportunity and takes right action according to how we are guided. So remember, Yahweh's not slack. 2 Kefa 3:9, you can go and look at that yourself. And then in Ecclesiastes 9:10, you know, anything you set your hands to do, do it with all your might. And if you want to see some excuses, you can go to Luke 9:59-62, and you could read about some procrastination taking place there. I mean, those were heavy-duty excuses. And some of the reasons for these are lack of direction. It may be an unpleasant task. The timing may be wrong. You may have anxiety about doing this job. You may have a lack of confidence about the opportunities. Or you just may be all-out lazy. But these can be overcome by something Pastor has always told us to do. Hurry and work. Hurry and work. Hurry and work, right? So one step at a time, one small action at a time, just like it occurred with our beloved overseer, Israel Hawkins. You know, he had that goal in mind, but it was a step at a time. He started selling Bibles. Then there was a radio show. Then a newsletter. Then the press room was built. Then the feast grounds. Then a sanctuary. A mobile and the homestead. Then a mobile sanctuary. Then the sanctuary in Abilene. And now this sanctuary. And the preaching and publishing has been sent out to all the world. And then you consider the house of Yahweh is expanding through Abilene, through Texas, all the way to California and beyond. I mean, Jupiter? Wow. I mean, is that not awesome? I mean, hearing the things that are coming forth from Pastor, and he's just talking about it like it's another thing, you know? I mean, because he knows the plan, he knows the goal, and he knows we're going to achieve this. So always remember, Israel Hawkins is a man of action, and we need to be like him, and he's forming us into that true person, that person that can do exactly what he does, and that's no procrastination, be a man of action, a person of action, and hurry and work. And remember, when that task or the opportunity knocks, take hold of it, okay? All right, Yahweh bless your understanding. If you all please stand. It's my great pleasure and opportunity to present to you the great deacon, Benaiah Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. It's the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. There are 4,199 religions in the world, teaching a mixture of righteousness and evil. The world is a very ugly place to live in. You are considered ugly if you aren't handsome or beautiful in outward appearance. But their definition of the word beautiful is wrong. The laws of Yahweh are beautiful, and so are those that love them and keep them. Ugly can also describe how a person acts. We see evidence of this ugliness throughout scriptures. The ugly people of this world are offensive, rude, morally reprehensible, threatening, likely to cause embarrassment or trouble, inclined to anger or bad feelings, cross or disagreeable. The people in this ugly world are doing these things and much, much more. When we think of the house of Yahweh and the people of Yahweh, we should remember one thing. There are no ugly people in the house of Yahweh. So he did a gematria on the word ugly. So we have here 3094, 2748, 458, and when you add them together, you get 6300. So 3094 is splendidly praising Yahweh in the name of two Israelites. Now, watch the roots as I go through this because it's kind of interesting. So we start with 1984, and that means to be openly clear, lacking subtlety, to be radiantly clear and obvious, to clearly shine, to be splendid, to splendidly raise, to splendidly boast. But the one thing the house of Yahweh people are not is foolish. It also means to rave and to celebrate. And if you look at the bottom at the KJV part, it also says to give in marriage. Now, if you turn to 2 Chronicles 5, verse 13, which is on page 356, and it says, the trumpeters and singers joined together as with one voice to give praise and thanks to Yahweh, accompanied by trumpets, chetzotzerot, cymbals, harps, and zithers. They raised their voices in praises to Yahweh and saying, He is righteous. His love and mercy endures forever. Then the house of Yahweh filled with a cloud. Yahweh's presence, a cloud of righteousness, peace, and love, fills the house of Yahweh at the feasts, the Sabbaths, and new moons. And we are openly clear that we love Yahweh, Yeshua, Pastor, and each other. We are the family of Yahweh, and the only ones who love Father Yahweh and keep all of His laws. Now, an interesting thing was the other root was 410, and that goes to 352 and 193. Now, the great Kahan, a couple of weeks ago, gave us the number 410 and 193. So 410 is firm strength, sturdiness, a firm grip, sturdy. Yahweh is a superior indomitable strength. And the root is 352, which means strength, sturdiness, anything strong or sturdy, a chief, a ram, a pillar or pilaster as in the house of Yahweh, an oak or other strong, sturdy tree. And then the great queens of the house of Yahweh made reference to a sturdy tree, which is pastor. And at the bottom of the 352, if you look, it says mighty man. Turn over to Psalm 18, verses 1 and 2, and that's on page 440. And it says, we love you, O Yahweh, our strength, is verse 1. Verse 2 is, Yahweh is our rock, our fortress, and our Savior, our Father, our strength in you we trust, our buckler, our horn of salvation, and our high tower. Now look at 193. It says the body and powerful. Each of us is a portion of the body Yahweh has created to fight against Satan and our evil system. Our ability to stand against evil and unrighteousness comes from Father Yahweh's unlimited power. He gives us strength to fight against the abominations of the world. That strength, that power, comes from keeping Yahweh's laws. We go over to Colossians 1, It'll be verse 18 on page 925. And we'll also go to Colossians 3:15 on page 927. So Colossians 1, verse 18 is, "For he is the head of the body, the called out ones, who is beginning of the firstborn from the dead, so that in all things he may have the preeminence." And Colossians 3:15 on page 927 is, "And let the peace of Yahweh rule in your hearts, to which you are also called into one body, and be thankful." Now the next word was 27:48. And it means, or horoscopist. Pastor is not a horoscopist, nor is he a magician. He is a righteous teacher that studies the book of Yahweh, interprets it, and teaches us the things he has learned. There's no magic involved, no checking the heavens. He is just a simple man studying righteousness so he can teach Yahweh's people about the prophecies and about how to live righteously. Pastor's job is to expose the sins of the world. The world seeks after the familiar spirits, the dead rabbis, and demons trying to predict the future. If you go to Isaiah 8, verses 19 and 20, and that's on page 534. And in verse 19, it starts, "They will come, and all of them will rest in the desolate valley, and in the holes of the rocks, and upon thorns, and upon all bushes." In verse 20, it says, "In the same day Yahweh will shave with a hired razor with those from beyond the Euphrates River, the king of Assyria, the head, the hair, the feet, and it will also consume the beard." Only Yahweh can foretell the future, and he gives it only to his two witnesses. If you turn to Isaiah 44, verse 7 on page 558. And verse 7 says, "And who as I foretell and will set an order for me, since I appointed the ancient people, and the things which are coming will come, let them foretell." Now another root of 2748 was 2747. And what it says is, "A chisel or graver, a style for writing." And if you look at the bottom, it says a pen. Now, Pastor does use a pen to write the things we read. And he does have a unique style, a style that only a righteous man of Yahweh would have. And we are very blessed to be able to learn from him. He helps us to engrave the laws of Yahweh in our hearts and minds, and helps us to become righteous members of Yahweh's family. So the next number is 458, and it means Yahweh of King and the name of an Israelite. Now I look down at the roots, you see 410 and 4428. Now this is the second time we've seen 410 with 352 as its root and 193 as the root of 352. So 4428 means Melech or Malki and a king. And the Ritz wrote is 4427, and it means Malik, to reign, to ascend the throne, to induct into royalty, to take counsel. This is talking about Yahweh, Yahshua, Pastor, the great priests, the great queens, and so on in the house of Yahweh. Turn to Revelation 15, verse 3, on page 980. And it says, "And they sang the song of Moshe, the servant of Yahweh, and the song of the Lamb, saying, Great and marvelous are your works, Father Yahweh Almighty. Just and true are your ways, O King of Saints." So the second time you see the 352, the 410, 352, and 193, and the last number, when you add them all together, is 6300. Now 6300 means Yahweh has ransomed in the name of an Israelite. If you look at the bottom, you see the root 6299 and again 410. So this is the third time we've seen 410, 352, and 193. So the root of 62 or 6300 is 6299, and it means to sever, ransom, to release, or preserve. Turn to Matthew 20. verse 28, which is on page 748. And it says, just as the Son of Man did not come to be waited on, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Go over to 1 Timaeus 2, verse 6, on page 933. And it says, who gave himself as a ransom for all to be testified of in a proper time. Yeshua Messiah gave himself to redeem us from Satan. If you go to 1 Corinthians 6, verse 20, on page 891. And verse 20 says, for you were bought with a price. Therefore glorify Yahweh in your body and in your spirit, which are Yahweh's. If you look at the letter A in the margin, it's 4151 in Greek, and it meaning human, the rational soul, mental disposition, and so on, and the mind. Now, number 410 tells us the Father Yahweh has always been in control and always will be. Father Yahweh has a plan that has been in place for thousands of years and is still acting. He is controlling that plan and is making sure it's carried out the way he wants it to be. Number 352 is about the house of Yahweh and pastor. The house of Yahweh is the pillar and ground of the truth. Pastor is a strong, sturdy tree. He is a tree that teaches love, peace, righteousness to all of the house of Yahweh. Pastor is also our chief, our overseer, our teacher, our shepherd, our Yahweh on earth. Number 193 tells us that we are to be in unity with each other as the body is with all of its parts. We, as a body, have the power to resist sin. Turn to 2 Timaeus 1, verse 7, on page 937. Verse 7 says, for Yahweh has not given us a spirit of moral cowardice, being timid and fearful, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And go over to Isaiah 40 on page 555, and we'll look at verse 29. And 29 says, he gives power to the faint. To those who have no might, he increases strength. We are the beautiful people spoken about in scriptures. We are the law keepers, not the ugly people of the world. We are righteous ones living in peace, love, and joy, not in sorrow, pain, and darkness that the ugly world is in now. Just remember this. There are no ugly people in the house of Yahweh. Turn to Jeremiah 33, verse 9, on page 602. Then this city will be the name of joy to me, a praise and honor before all nations of the earth, who shall hear of all the righteous things I do for them. They will reverence and tremble for all the righteousness and all the success that I provide for. Welcome home, great saints of Yahweh, to the great city of Israel. Yahweh bless your understanding. If you'll please stand. I'll turn it over to the great deacon, Antithea Hawkins.
Hello, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. I hope that everyone is enjoying the feast and find a place in this great work. That's what we are here for after all, right? We are here to serve each other. If you turn over to page 206, while you turn in there, I want you to answer this question also. Will you write it down, please? What do we all need to have in order to for our frequency to connect with Yahweh? Please write the answer down. What do we all need to have in order for our frequency to connect with Yahweh? It's a great answer. Well, I just want to look real briefly here at mindset. In Judges chapter 9, Abimelech. Okay. Here's a man that was chosen to be king. He killed his 70 brothers, got rid of them. In verse 4, it talks about they gave him 70 silver shekels from the temple of Baal. That should tell you something wrong right there. Which Abimelech used to hire worthless and reckless men who became his followers. In these days, you know, in those days with the kings, it was a lot of turmoil going on, and it was a challenge for the people of Yahweh. You know, reverencing Yahweh and holding fast to Yahweh. There were kings that were rise and fall, some were not even mentioned because of the evil acts they were continually doing. I want you to pay attention, however, you need to read the scriptures, chapter 9. You can read the entire chapter. But I really want to pay attention to the side note, G4. It said, by this parable, he declares that those who are not covetous are most worthy. Those who are not covetous are most worthy. Those who are not covetous are most worthy. I hear this question many times, but what is your agenda? What is your purpose? Why do you believe? Those who are not covetous are most worthy of honor, but those who are covetous abuse their honor, both to their own destruction as well as others. It takes a long time to grow, to gain better understanding and insight in us of Yahweh. If you come looking for the wrong thing, you could be offended quickly. You will think this is not the place, and you may want to seek somewhere else. It takes time. And Yahweh wants to see what you're made of, your backbone. Nerves of steel. How can you put up and endure with all these things? That's what Yahweh was looking for. Verse 16 said, therefore, if you have acted honorably and thankfully, this is referring to Abimelech here, because of the things he have done that was wrong in killing these men and hiring these worthless men and continuing to cause damage. The youngest of the brothers had remained alive, if you read the story. He hid and he remained alive. And he's given some account here. In verse 19, he said again, and if you had acted honorably and truthfully. And we just read that, Sinai 4. Not covetous are most worthy of honor. Yahweh has given us, want to give us his greatest possessions. I want you to think about it. Verse 29. Here's another young man, another man who rose up, and he wanted to be king also, wanted to get rid of Abimelech. And he said, if only I were leading this people. Who's leading the people in these last days? Israel Hawkins. No one else. You see, throughout the ages, man, through their own interpretation of things, have tried to take the kingdom or the plan of Yahweh, not understanding everything clearly. Yahweh say in these last days, everything will be plainly revealed through one man. Let's turn to Yochanan. As you turn to Yochanan, now there's a video. But the video is set up because there's a point I want to show in this video, okay, that everyone, we all have different difficulties and challenges and problems, okay? It's said that everyone has STDs, mental illness to some degree. Let's play the video if it's ready.
So on the screen, we see examples of brain scans. On the left-hand side is a healthy brain, and we're looking at the inside of the brain. These are called brain SPECT scans. And on the right, you're seeing a hateful brain that is overfocused. And on that picture, where the arrow is the part of the brain that's responsible for shifting gears in the brain. So when it's overactive, the person tends to ruminate on the same thought, obsess on the same thought. It's the same part of the brain that's responsible for error detection. So somebody who's more prone to looking at people's errors or faults is going to zone in on that. The next scan is the outside of the brain. The colors don't mean anything. We look at holes and dent marks. On the left-hand side is a healthy-looking brain, which is round, symmetrical, no holes or dents. And on the right side, we're seeing a problem in this person's left temporal lobe. I like to think of it as temporal, temples, temper. Easier to remember that way. Left temporal lobe significantly decreased. And when that's down, you tend to see problems with hate and violence and dark thoughts. Finally, on the last scan, on the left-hand side, we're seeing a healthy scan again. And on the right-hand example is an example of a low frontal lobe function. So where those arrows are pointed, there's a decrease in the prefrontal cortex. That part of the brain is responsible for empathy and impulse control. But
are we born with that?
No.
Are we born with that?
No. Most of the time, humans are not born with that. And these are because of so many factors that occur in life. Head injuries, substance abuse, psychiatric illnesses, toxins, infections, anoxic injuries.
So you're not born with that brain?
Usually, no.
So you're not born with that brain?
Usually, no.
So you're not born with that brain?
Usually, no.
So, despite the challenges we have in our walk with Yahweh, I wanted to see how that will help us to understand looking at ourselves, first of all, as individuals, and our walk with Yahweh. Yes, we do have challenges and difficulties. And sometimes we don't know that how we may treat others or look at others, how that could affect their problem that they already have. We are all in this together. You know, when Yahshua drew the line, no one could have cast a stone. So really think about that. No one could have cast a stone when he drew that line. If we only dwell on the problems and the negativity and the shortcomings of individuals, we'll never see the big picture. You don't think Yahweh sees that? This is his plan, and he's in full control. He knows everyone's shortcomings. He knows what you're capable of. Everything. There's nothing hidden from him. But he's still us a teacher. Remember the question I asked, right? What we all need to have in order to make frequency to have that connection with Yahweh. Turn to page 820, and we're going to probably be here for the duration of time that we have today. This is Yochanan chapter 5. Yochanan chapter 5. Page 820. Perfect. And we start in verse 36. But I have testimony even greater than that of Yochanan, the works which the Father has given me to finish, the same works that I do, they testify on my behalf that the Father has sent me. And the Father himself, who has sent me, testify on my behalf. You have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape, nor do you have his words dwelling in you. Because whom he has sent, him you have not believe. Search out the scripture, for in them you think you have eternal life. And these are they who testify about me. But you will not come to me that you have life. Come to the house of Yahweh, no matter what. You may have to endure and persevere. No matter what you may be feeling or dealing with emotionally, physically, mentally, you can overcome it. That's like character. We're not born with it. We have to develop it, right? Does it take a year? Does it take 6 months? Does it take many years? It could take a long time. Verse 41, I do not receive honor from men, but I know you that you do not have the love of Yahweh in you. I have come to my Father in my Father's name, but you do not follow me. Let another come in his own name, him you will follow. That story with Abimelech, that's what was taking place there. How can you believe when you accept honor from one another, but do not seek the honor that comes from Yahweh only? The only representative we have of Yahweh in these last days is Israel Hawkins. Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one who accuses you. I want to read something from, this is in The Search of the Savior, on page 145. The title here, When Will the Kingdom of Yahweh Come? When can we expect to see this wonderful plan of Yahweh fulfilled? When will Yahshua Messiah, together with the Yahweh saints, actually arrive and take over the entire planet Earth and the universe? Think about Jupiter, right, with 1,300 Earths. Now, this woman had a job, and yet jealousy was still there. How much power you need? How much power could you even control? If Yahweh doesn't give you the ability to control it, you will just explode. For almost 6,000 years, righteous men and women, call out saints who understood Yahweh's plan, have hoped and prayed for Yahweh's government to be established. These call out ones have preached and published, lived and labored, and yes, even died for the sake of righteousness. Throughout their lifetime, they yearn for Yahweh to bring righteousness and peace to this world once and for all. They labored and preached and published to their fellow men the purity, clarity, and honesty of Yahweh's 613 righteous laws. Unlike the law of man, Yahweh's laws are clear-cut, straightforward. There is no hypocrisy, there is no corruption, no hidden agendas, and no allowance for abuse of them. The government of Yahweh's kingdom will rule as Yahweh himself rule, with mercy and righteousness, mercy and uprightness, love. So now, the title of the sermon is 6:29. And that's Yochanan 6, verse 29. So I asked the question, I don't know what you wrote down. What do we all need to have in order for our frequency to make connection with Yahweh? I heard unity, great answer. Love, great answer. Prayer. That's right. Israel Hawkins. Without Israel Hawkins, none of those other things will matter. You could take a scripture and you could try to figure it out wherever you want to go and try to figure it out. And you still have to come here. I was listening to some of the brothers giving some testimony of some of the struggles they have just coming to the feast. But they were determined, and they are here. Brothers and sisters, praise Yahweh. Remember these things. Remember the joy we need to have and share with each other, that love for each other. Yochanan 6:29, Yahshua answered and said to them, this is the work of Yahweh. This is the only work of Yahweh. If Israel call you and tell you to go move that is the work of Yahweh. Nothing else matter except that instructions. I'm not saying that you should not, if something is going on at the moment, you could ask pastor a question, maybe, if it's allowed. But pastor is the urgency that needs to be done at that moment. Do we understand that? What he said, that's what needs to be done at that moment. He knows what he's doing. Yahweh is training for this job. See that scripture there? That we will believe in him whom he has sent. Israel Abel Hawkins. Without him, our frequency will not connect with Yahweh. If you'll please stand. At this time, I have the honor and great privilege to introduce the great Kohan, Ilya Matthews Hawkins.
Shalom, sons and daughters of Israel Abel. What a great honor. Please be seated. Wow, these men are going to think that I'm copying pieces of their sermons. If you would, open your books of Yahweh to page 592. We're going to go over some, just reflect on some sermons that we all know very well. Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 20. It says, the judgment of Yahweh will not return until he has executed and performed the thoughts of his heart, until he's executed this plan. And in the latter days, you will understand it perfectly. I just want the thought in your mind. How is it that it is in the latter days that we would understand it perfectly? Is it just because we're alive? Of course not. Revelations 12:9 says the whole world is deceived. And there are a lot of people that are alive in these last days. But they don't understand Yahweh's plan, his thoughts, at all. Okay, it's only a specific group. Turn over to Revelations chapter 2. This is what spawned at least the title of the sermon. Revelations 2, look at verse 1, just the beginning. To the Moloch of the congregation of the house of Yahweh. So this is to us, brethren. The house of Yahweh. Look down to verse 2. This is our high priest speaking. I know your works. I know your works. Pastor's recording our works. And our labor, and our patience, the way that we're holding on to joy as we're doing the work. Look down to verse 4. Nevertheless, I have some things against you because you have left your first love. Now, Yahweh willing, this doesn't apply to anyone in my eyesight. But this is the title of the sermon. Remember your first love. Remember the witness Israel. Remember your first love. Remember the witness Israel. Page 966, 1 Shachanan 4. A few pages back. We're going to do verses 20 and 21. If anyone says, I love Yahweh, and he hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love Yahweh whom he has not seen? And we're going to continue on love in just a moment. In verse 21, I'm going to change your word here to make some emphasis here. For we have this commandment from him, that he who loves Yahweh must love Israel Hawkins also. Must. He's your brother. Okay, so where are we going here? First Corinthians 13. I know we all know this. So, page 896. Let's read about love for a moment. It's very, very common. But let's think about this because we must love Israel Hawkins. So these things must apply as well towards Israel Hawkins. Verses, chapter 13, verses 4. That's where we'll start. See how far we go. Love is patient. So there's patience involved. And it's kind. There's kindness, just like we're learning in our workshops. Yeah. Role models and positive moral examples. Love is not jealous. And it's not boastful. If this fits the mold that's inside of any of us, carefully think on this. It's not boastful. It's not puffed up with pride. It does not behave rudely. How do we speak when we're bringing our questions and concerns, cares and concerns, to the counselors? because they are representing Yahweh to you at that time. They're representing Israel Hawkins to you at that time. Do we behave rudely? Are we patient? Does not seek its own advantage. It is not provoked. It doesn't become worked up in irritation. Oh, you just don't understand what I'm saying. Thinks no evil. It does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the laws of Yahweh and truth. It does not betray, and the main part I want you to see is believes all things. Believes all things. This is when we know that we love Israel Hawkins. Hopes all things, endure all things. And in verse 8 says it never fails. Never. On page 966 yet again, just for a quick moment. It was a quick, easy one on why it never fails. 1 Yochanan 4:16. And we have known and believed that the love that Yahweh has for us. Because Yahweh is love. And he who dwells in love dwells in Yahweh and Yahweh in him. You see, it's not going to fail. The plan of Yahweh is not going to fail. In this beautiful unity, Deuteronomy 6:4, you don't have to turn there. Yahweh is one. One. So Yahweh, if you'll think with me, is in unity with our great high priest, with our overseer, Pastor Israel Hawkins, with the administration, the priesthood and the great house of Yahweh, and every last man, woman, and child that keeps and upholds his laws. He's in full unity with that. So think about our behavior when we come against one another. Father Yahweh, I love you, but I never did like him. I don't like the way he talks to me. Never did. You see, no, we've broken the unity. That's not loving Yahweh. We really need to analyze every single thought. I know we know that. It's just a reflection, just to think on. Let's go to Zechariah. Let's look at Pastor some more here. Zechariah chapter 6. Page 719, verses 12 and 13. Speak to him and say, this is what Yahweh of hosts says. Behold. All right, look, watch, observe, pay attention to this man whose name is the branch. For he will branch out of his from his place. And he will build the house of Yahweh. Now, let's not forget this. He built the house of Yahweh. None of us would be here without him. Yes, he will build the house of Yahweh. He will bear glory and will sit and rule on his throne. He has a throne, a job, a position. Who are we to contend with him? He will be a priest upon his throne. Do you know anyone else alive that fits this scripture? He will be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace will be between him and our great high priest. When you're wrestling with counselors, there's nothing wrong with bringing up questions. There's nothing wrong with bringing up concerns. But there is something wrong with a wrestling match. There's nothing wrong with bringing up doubts if they're brought up to your counselors. And then we perform and ask in conformity with the faith to believe the things that we're taught, not to be in rebellion against the faith. So there's nothing wrong with the questions. I'm not trying to deter from that. I'm trying to make the point that when we wrestle with the administration of Yahweh, when we're wrestling with Israel Hawkins, and we're actually showing Yahweh that we've broken this unity in which he said that he was going to build this house upon in these last days. I was going to show more. Look up at the top of the page. Let's see, verses 10 and 11. Then I said, this is chapter 5. Then I said to the Moloch who was speaking with me, where are they, the two witnesses going with the ephah? And he said to me to build the house of Yahweh according to the standard of perfection. He has the standard of perfection. None of us do. He knows how to teach me how to eat an apple. It's that simple. Brother, I've been eating apples for 40 years. It doesn't matter. It's just a parallel to make a point. Let's go to Matithiah chapter 16. Let's see what Yahweh has here. Matithiah 16, verse 18. And I also say to you who are Kepha, whose name means rock, that upon this rock, Yahweh unity, I will build this house. 2 Corinthians, on page 908. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Here's the Apostle Shaul. Get there. See, he dealt with the same thing. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 14. Let's see. Shaul says here that now for the third time I'm ready to come to you. All right. And I will not be a burden for you. Okay, let's come down to verse 20. For I fear that when I come, I might not find you as I would want, and that you might not find me as you would want, that there might be contentions, jealousies, outbursts of anger, factions, slander, gossip, whispering, arrogance, and uproar. At least half of those I know from reports and even myself personally and in ministering the teachings from the house of Yahweh, we still deal with this. So I'm not blowing hot air. I know it doesn't apply to 99.9 in this room, but it cannot be any further. Look over to Ecclesiastes 5. You know the scripture. Let me show you how we get in this trouble sometimes. Keep your foot, watch your step. We've heard this many, 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 many times. Keep our feet, watch our steps when we go to the house of Yahweh. No, it doesn't mean that the house of Yahweh is some control freaks. They don't want us to talk. They don't want us to ask questions. Of course not. And be more ready to listen. Be more ready to listen. Be more ready to listen than to give the sacrifice of fools. For they don't even realize that they do evil. This is what occurs when we don't listen more than we speak, when we don't seek the right time to speak. Look at the beginning of verse 2. Don't be rash. Don't be reckless with our mouths. Even if we feel we're strongly correct in our point, it doesn't mean we can be reckless towards the priest of Yahweh. Hebrews chapter 10. We all know this very well as well. Hebrews 10, 16. Here's our unity, if you would. This is the covenant that I will renew with them after those days, says Yahweh. I will write my laws in their hearts, and in their minds I will write them. That's not a praise Yahweh for parents, brothers, sisters, roommates, cellmates, or whatever Yahweh used to draw us to Israel Hawkins, but Yahweh writes his laws in our hearts and our minds from the witness Israel. Period. You see that? I will write, Yahweh says. He did that, not my mommy that might have gave me a booklet. Praise Yahweh, if she did. Mine didn't, but. It was actually Yahweh doing the calling. It's Yahweh doing the teaching. It's amazing to think that some could possibly think that Yahweh, if you turn to Isaiah chapter 24, if you would, we'll read this again for the first time. That Yahweh is some vicious God. How many years ago did Israel Hawkins teach us that no, this is something that the translators did. It's an error, it's a mistake. So when these thoughts come to our hearts and our minds, then, you know, we really need to reflect back on their teachings. You have, I have the older book of Yahweh, but chapter 24, verse 1, it's before Yahweh's very eyes that Yahweh is allowing the earth to be made empty and to be made waste. He's allowing it to be perverted, perverts the face of it, and scatters abroad its inhabitants. In verse 2, notice it'll be with the people, all of the people. Verse 3, the land will be utterly emptied, utterly plundered. Here's the end result now of what we have read through many times. It's not that Yahweh is going to empty the land. By no means. For Yahweh have spoken this word. He's going to allow it right before his very eyes. The earth mourns and fades away. The universe, the world mourns and it fades away. The haughty, the mighty people of the earth are sick as well. Just saw a little smidgen of that with the deacon before me. The earth is also defiled under the inhabitants, not because of Yahweh, under the inhabitants of it, because they have transgressed the law. They have changed the ordinance. They have broken the everlasting covenant. Because of this, the curse has devoured the earth. Not because Yahweh created it that way, brethren. The earth mourns. The earth mourns. Let's see if that's correct. Is that correct? Where they can see that? It's just a little side note. The Organic Consumers Association cites several other studies with similar findings. Cushy Institute analysis of nutrient data from 1975 to 1997 found that an average of calcium levels in 12 fresh vegetables dropped 27%. Iron levels dropped 37%. Vitamin A levels 21%. Vitamin C levels, 30%. A similar study of British nutrient data from 1930 to 1980, published in the British Food Journal, found that in 20 vegetables, the average calcium content had declined 19%, iron 22%, and potassium 14%. Yet another study concluded, and I like this example, simple for my slow mind, another study concluded that one would have to eat 8 oranges today to derive the same amount of vitamin A as our grandparents would have gotten from one. The earth is mourning in more ways than just producing oranges and vitamin A. But who taught you that a long time ago? Remember your first love now. Remember the witness Israel. The haughty people of the earth. They're sick. They languish. Here's a great Kohanya Didia plug. This is from the fifth book of Israel. Chapter 5, verse 4. It says, the articles Kohanya Didia had are showing how some of the microorganisms hide in the body and breed in the body. They say are fusing together or one is opening up and absorbing the other. kind of molesting the other, raping the other. Same thing we see in the atmosphere. If you would think of man's actions at this time, my emphasis there, these are crossing like they're not supposed to. I just want you to see, years ago, Pastor was teaching us how these diseases hide in the body. He made a mention of it here in the sixth book of Israel. Again, just the highlighted part, there's the emphasis. As you heard in the article this morning, the mad cow disease, as I told you 15 years ago, would hide in the body. It would take about 15 years to surface. You knew this many, 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 many years ago. Let's look at one of these diseases. I want to show you something. Oh, wow. You don't have to raise your hand. You ever had chicken pox before? You didn't have to say it either. My fault. I want you to think about it. But praise Yahweh. Chicken pox. It's a highly contagious disease caused by varicella zoster virus. It can cause an itchy, blister-like rash. And the rash appears first on the chest, back, and face, and then it spreads over the entire body. Continuing, about one out of every three people in the United States will develop shingles. Okay, went from chickenpox to shingles. Also known as herpes zoster in their lifetime. An estimated 1 million people get shingles every year, each year in this country. If you've ever had chickenpox, you can get shingles. Sounds interesting. My brain's a little slow, but it's just interesting to hear. Well, you know, what's the point here? What's the deal between the two of them? Well, it has something to do with something the greatest teacher in the world has taught us many, many years ago. I had a nice ugly picture there that was just too ugly, so I had to edit it out. But the information is at least here. Herpes zoster. Also known as shingles. You see that very first word, by the way? How many times has Pastor told us about 99% of diseases caused by STDs? Look at that first word. Herpes zoster, also known as shingles, is caused by the reactivation of the varicella zoster virus, the same virus that causes chickenpox. Primary infection with this VZV causes varicella. Now notice, once the illness is over, once it resolves, the virus remains latent in the dorsal root ganglia. It hides in the body. VZV can reactivate later in a person's life and cause a painful rash called herpes zoster. I don't know how someone can even stand in opposition. I can see running from shame if they don't receive the counsel and get the nourishment from the house of Yahweh. You know, this information, we're all scholars to the world with this information. They look at us as if we're Israel Hawkins. I've seen it with my own eyes in teaching men in peaceful solution classes. I've seen it. They're I love to take them information from the House of Yahweh News. They don't know that's where it's coming from. But they love it. They soak it up like a sponge. They think I know something. I'm the slow brain. Psalms chapter 19. It's on page 441. Let's do verse 7. Start at verse 7. All these scriptures we all know very well. Pastor made mention of something about this unity from Yahweh. This unity that Yahweh is writing in our hearts and our minds in these last days. Okay? The laws of Yahweh are perfect. They're converting the whole person. The testimony of Yahweh is sure. There's no wiggle room. It makes the simple ones wise. The statutes of Yahweh are right. The rejoicing the heart and mind and the commandments of Yahweh are pure, bringing understanding to the eyes. The reverence of Yahweh is clean, enduring forever. This unity is eternal, Pastor just said. It cannot be broken. If we'll hold on with the desire to actually believe what's taught, I've been there before. I understand confusion. But when you're taught, we have to listen. We have to wait on Yahweh for the understanding and continue studying. And sit back and watch and behold the magnificence of Yahweh. You'll start to grow. You'll grow like a bush plant that was planted and you didn't expect it to grow. It's been an honor to address the great flock of Yahweh. If you all please stand. I'd like to turn the podium over to the great Kahan Michael Hawkins.
Shalom. Please be seated. Please be seated. Wow. A lot of information brought out today. Let's go over to Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2. Now, this is talking about Yeshua. What we're going to be talking about today is really about Yeshua and, of course, the prophets and of Israel Hawkins. It's our life. In Luke 2, verse 39. Luke 2, verse 39. It says, so when he had performed, everything according to the law of Yahweh, they returned to Galilee to their own city. Now, this is after Yeshua had been born, and they brought him to the temple to go through the necessary things that are according to Yahweh's law. And then you notice verse 40, it says, and the child grew. This is talking about Yeshua. Yeshua grew strong in spirit. Now, how could that be done? How could Yeshua, if he was a pre-existent being, as the world wants to teach, how in the world could he grow in spirit? And filled with wisdom, and the honor of Yahweh was upon him. Okay, the honor of Yahweh was upon him. Jump down to verse 52. And Yeshua increased in wisdom, in age, and in honor with Yahweh and man. Okay, now that shows you there how he increased. He increased in the wisdom of Yahweh as he grew older, and in honor with Yahweh and man. So this character that Yahweh was building in him, okay, was seen by Yahweh, and it was also, of course, seen by men, this righteous character. Turn over to Isaiah 44, because, you know, Yahweh uses mankind to build his character, and it's built within a person. It's something that has to be developed, but, of course, Yahweh will always see that his will is done, and that his work is completed in a person. In Isaiah 44, verse 21, it says, remember these lessons, and of course this is talking about the worship of gods. He says, because of all the things that's written, all the verses above it is referring to that. O Jacob and Israel, he says, for you are servants. I made you a servant to me, O Israel. You will not be forgotten by me. Think about that. You know, when Yahweh does something, he brings it to completion. He says, I'm not going to forget you, Israel. You know, Yahweh formed him as a servant, as he says here. You are my servant, Israel. And he formed him from the womb, okay? And, you know, if it wouldn't be for that very fact of what Yahweh did with a beloved overseer, we wouldn't have any knowledge at all. We'd be dumb. You know, we wouldn't even know how to keep the Sabbath day holy, right, if it wasn't for our great teacher. We'd still be struggling. Look at this. In the seventh book of Israel, this is part 1, chapter 3, verse 84. He says, you really need to cram for these exams and get with your teachers. Learn to teach, but learn these books. Learn how you can teach from these books. This book of Israel, I'm convinced that Yahweh is going to use it throughout all eternity. I believe, brethren, we're put together through the inspiration of Yahweh, the books that we're going to use on the planets. And that this is going to be made aware to the universe. And the universe, the beings that inhabit the planets now, they're going to be taught by these books that Yahweh has inspired to put together in these last days. So you better hang on to those books, okay? Don't lose them, okay? He says, there's no doubt in my mind that this is going to be used. They're so clear, and you can study anything that's said. You see, there's no doubt in his mind. That doubt doesn't exist in Israel Hawkins' mind, you know? He's positive in everything that he thinks about. He's always thinking of what the outcome is, of what Yahweh is going to present, you know, what the outcome of the ultimate result of what Yahweh is going to have. That's what we see in our overseer. And that's why it's so important to realize why we need these books. Let me show you this. This is in the second book of Israel, chapter 11, verses 15 and 16. Now he says, the truth is what his house is seeking for, the complete truth. Now, to know the truth, you don't get it overnight. He says, I told you last week. That's the way it is when he speaks too, right? It always seemed like it was just last week he said something. Yeah? It seemed like Yahweh started almost a generation ago, when I was in my mother's womb, even to teach me the scriptures. He says, I don't know all the answers yet, and I'll be the first one to admit that. I even get things out of my own books that I have written. I will pick one up and start reading it, and I get those things reading from the book back to me that were inspired by Yahweh that I didn't understand when I wrote them. Now, I don't think it's so much that he didn't understand. I just think as he was reading, his knowledge increases even more and his understanding increases even more to where it realized where he has even more and more understanding. I mean, think of it under inspiration of Yahweh. Think of that. How amazing that is. That Yahweh can take a person and put these things in his mind and in his heart to where he has the understanding of the Creator and his plan. And then he's able to take that and to present that information to us and give us the understanding. You know, and he works feverishly to try and get this information in our brains so that we can understand these things. And what does the world do with it? They cast it aside to worship the gods. It just don't make any sense, does it? Yeah, in the third book of Israel. In the third book of Israel, it says, this is Psalm 91, verse 15. It says, you will call me and I will answer you. He says, I've told you before that I beg Yahweh. I beg Yahweh all the time. And he tells me, it's in the books. He told me about three times in dreams, it's in the books. You know, and you've seen pictures where a pastor has all sorts of books, stacks of magazines and articles and lexicons and dictionaries and you name it. He's studying, you know, all this information to bring to us, to give us a clearer understanding of Yahweh's great plan. And we need this information. As you just see, Yahweh told him and revealed to him in dreams, Israel, it's in the books. It's in the books. Search the books. And that's what he does day and night. But he's the only one that has understanding to be able to give these things into us. And, you know, the understanding that we have is limited in mankind. But Yahweh's always used man to teach man. He's never used the gods to teach man. There's never been a God-savior, as the world likes to to believe and to teach. Let's cover something here, because I want you to understand this. In the ninth book of Israel, part 1, chapter 17, he's talking about Yeshua, and he says, Yeshua, he wasn't alive in heaven. He wasn't a being before he was born of man. He wasn't half God and half man. Now, that's for the Christians, okay? And he wasn't half Yahweh and half man. That's for the rest of the assemblies, okay? All the assemblies that are out there are deceived. He was led by Yahweh when he was born. You see that? When he was born, he was led by Yahweh. He was led by Yahweh and taught before he was born in the womb of Miriam. But his father was Yosef, as is plainly said in the genealogies in the second part of the book of Yahweh. If anyone would believe it, if they would only believe it, but the world doesn't believe it. They want to believe in this God-man, you know, that there's salvation out there through the gods. And it's not. The gods cannot bring salvation. Continue on, he says, his father was Yosef and his mother was Miriam. He's the son of man, not the son of Yahweh, until he was begotten by the Spirit of Yahweh, which are the laws and the prophecies that he taught, that begot him, yes, from heaven. Praise Yahweh, then he was born into that same character. Okay, born into that same character. Now, that's a pretty profound statement, right? But if you believe in the law and the prophets, it makes so much sense, and you can, you know, if you keep that in mind, to believe in the law and the prophets, you'll never be deceived. You cannot be deceived if you believe in the law and the prophets. And so this is what Pastor's continually teaching us. In Matithia, I want to show you this, because, you know, Yahweh's always used man and mankind to raise up servants unto him. Remember that. That's what we started off with, about the servants and the wisdom of Yahweh that Yeshua grew in. In Matithia 1:25, I just want to read this last part of this verse here, because it says, she had given birth to her firstborn son and called his name Yeshua. Okay? What I want to do is establish a fact. We want to establish a fact. Now, there's certain parts in here we're not going to read, but they can be explained. Okay? They can be explained, but we're not going to do it now. But she had given birth to her firstborn son. And that's a fact. Okay? The fact is, what Yahweh wants you to see is Yeshua was the firstborn son of Miriam. Okay? And Yosef was his father, of course, because he wasn't a God man. He wasn't half human and half God. And you don't have to read anything into the scriptures. Just believe what the law and the prophets said. What did the law and the prophets say? It said that a virgin, not the way the world thinks about it and so forth, virgin, simply look up the Hebrew word. It simply means a woman who is of marriageable age. What's so difficult about that? Okay? And the prophecy was that a man and a woman would have a child, and that child would become the Messiah. Okay? And that was the sign that was given to the people in those last days. Now, turn over to Matithia 13. Matithia 13. In Matithia 13. So, we know the fact is that Yeshua was the firstborn child of this family. Of course, so, you know, there was other members in the family as well, as we can read here. In Matithia 13, verse 54 to 58. This is when Yeshua was rejected as a prophet. But in verse 54 it says, And he came into his own country, and then he taught them in their synagogues, and they were astonished, and they said, where did this man receive this wisdom and these acts of power? You know, I mean, because he was brought up on it. That's how he received it. He was brought up on it. Remember all the sermons the pastor talked about being brought up, okay? So how did he receive this wisdom, these acts of power? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Miriam and his brothers called Jacob, Yosef, Simon, and Yada? And his sisters, are they not all with us? You see that word all? Now, that means that if he only had two sisters, they would have said both. Are they not both with us? But instead he says all. So we know there had to be at least three or more sisters too. And where did this man get all these things? So they were offended by him. But Yeshua said to them, a prophet is not without honor, except in his own country and in his own house. However, He did not do many works because of their unbelief. And what are you going to do with somebody who doesn't believe? You know, there's nothing you could do. If people do not believe the law and the prophets, there's no hope for them, right? I mean, you can't force people to believe. But they didn't believe him. And so, therefore, they lost out on the opportunity of actually accepting the Messiah. Now, you know, as I said, there were other family members in Yeshua's physical family, just like families have children, right? Here in Acts 1:14, it says, "These all continue with one accord in prayer and in supplication with the women and Miriam, the mother of Yeshua, and with his brothers." So suddenly he had brothers, right? Suddenly there's other family members that are there. And the Apostle Shaul, he also mentions the fact that Yeshua had family members, as you see in 1 Corinthians 9. Verse 1, he says, am I not an apostle? In verse 5, he says, do we not have the right to take a believing wife along with us, as do the other apostles and Yeshua's brothers and Kepha? So again, he acknowledges that he had brothers. And then, of course, the Apostle Shaul tells us that, you know, when he was visiting with the Apostle Kepha, he also saw one of Yeshua's brothers. In Galatians 1:19, he says, but I did not see any of the other apostles except Jacob, the ruler's brother. The ruler's brother. Now, turn over to Yochanan 6. Yochanan 6. In Jacob must have had a special place in Yeshua's heart, because Jacob was one of them that he appeared to after he had been resurrected. He appeared to Jacob and along with his disciples and stuff. So he must have had a special place in his heart. In Yochanan 6, let's look at verse 41. Yochanan 6, 41. He says, this is on page 821. Yochanan 6, verse 41. Now the Yadim murmured against them because he said, I am the bread which came down out of Yahweh. Okay? Then he said, is not this Yeshua the son of Yosef? We know his father and his mother. How can he say, I have come out of Yahweh? And notice this. They knew that he was born flesh and blood. They knew his parents. Okay? But they wondered, how in the world can he say, I came out of Yahweh? You listening? Let me tell you a secret. Israel Hawkins can say the same thing. Okay? He can say the same thing. He has come out of Yahweh. Okay? Now, how can he come out of Yahweh? The answer is the same as any servant of Yahweh comes. Okay? He's been called out and he's been brought up by Yahweh. You know, Yeshua Messiah was the firstborn of many brethren. Right? Many brethren. Well, Israel Hawkins is the firstborn of these in the last days as well, because he's the one who is the servant of Yahweh. He's the one who Yahweh chose to actually build the house of Yahweh itself. Now, you remember Luke 2:52, when we first start off, it says, Yeshua increased in wisdom, right? He increased in wisdom and in honor with Yahweh and man. So that's how he could say and claim that he came forth out of Yahweh. Look over Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1. Now remember, the key to prophecy is that Yahweh speaks as though things are already done. Okay? Yahweh speaks as though things are already done. All right? In Luke 1, verse 34 and 35. Now, verse 34 simply talks about the time before they were married. Okay? That's the time period that this prophecy was given. Remember, the birth of Yeshua was a prophecy. It was a fulfillment of prophecy. Okay? So don't let any of these Christian thoughts get into your head. Verse 35 says, and the Moloch answered and said to her, the Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of Yahweh will overshadow you. Therefore also that holy child who is to be born will be called the Son of Yahweh. Okay? So you can tell by the way this is written too, that it's also written for a future time or a future tense. Yeshua wasn't born before they were married. There was no sin, absolutely no sin involved in the birth of Yeshua. Okay, it says that Miriam was overshadowed. Okay, if people study the scriptures, they would know what it means Spirit holy, and they would also know what it means to be overshadowed, would they not? In over, the word overshadow, it means to cast a shade upon or to invest with preternatural influence, okay? Preternatural influence. Now, Webster's Revised Unabridged Dictionary of the English Language in 1913 edition informs us of this word, the meaning of preternatural. It means beyond or different from what is natural, or according to the regular course of things, but not clearly supernatural or miraculous, strange, inexplicable, or extraordinary, uncommon, irregular, or abnormal. And then they give some examples as a preternatural appearance, a preternatural stillness, a preternatural presentation in childbirth or labor. Did you get that? Yeshua's birth was out of the ordinary. But the fact is that this child was promised to be the Messiah. That's what made it so incredible. The promise, the fulfillment of this prophecy is what made his birth so incredible. And like Pastor said, it's changed the whole world. His birth has changed the entire world. But there was nothing out of the ordinary concerning his birth itself. He was a human being. He was born, just like any human being is born. You can see this a little clearer when you look at, this is the emphatic diglot, and it says, Luke 1:35 says, "And answering the messenger said to her, a spirit holy shall come upon thee, and a power of highest shall overshadow thee. And the being begotten holy shall be called a son of Yahweh." And the first thing to notice is that this being that was to be born is considered to be holy, right? It's considered to be holy. Now, if the people of the world would read the scriptures, like I said, they would know what spirit holy is. They would know what overshadowing is. But Yeshua explained this in Yochanan 6. Remember, he said spirit holy is the laws of Yahweh. Okay, remember that. Turn over to Matthew 1. Yeshua said that, and of course, overshadowing. You know, Miriam was a lawkeeper. And remember, it means influence. Overshadow means influence. And so she was influenced with the great love and the desire that she had to keep Yahweh's laws and to keep the word of Yahweh and actually to fulfill this prophecy, because she was, you know, at first she didn't understand, but I'm sure as time went on, she got more and more excited, you know, for this child to be born, realizing, of course, the heavy responsibility that both her and Yosef had. But remember, the Moloch told her that she had found honor with Yahweh. Now, so basically what that is, it's talking about the proclaiming of this prophecy is going to come to pass. In Matthew 1:18, it says, "Now, this is how the birth of Yeshua Messiah came about. When his mother Miriam had been betrothed to Yosef, okay, and before they came together, she was found to be with child by or through Holy Spirit." Now, we know that both Yosef and Miriam were strict law keepers, okay? The scriptures tells you that. And they love the laws of Yahweh. But this simply shows you that Yeshua was born by. Notice that word by. It means by. It also means through. And what is spirit holy? The laws of Yahweh. So the birth was a lawful birth, okay? There was nothing unlawful as the world wants to teach. You know, they teach the God worship, and they want salvation to come through God, so therefore they make him into a God. But the Savior's not a God. So as I said, there's no need to add anything on these things. In fact, this is a future tense. You know, they wanted to make it sound like Yosef wanted to divorce her. Well, look at the word divorce. See what it means. That's not the only meaning of that word. Okay, it simply means to send away. And someone may think, why would you want to send her away or anything like this? What occurred with Yochanan's birth? Look it up. Look and see what his mother did. She hid away. She hid herself away. Why? From the evil influences of the world, probably, you know. Look over to Galatians chapter 1. Galatians chapter 4. But they were lawkeepers. They kept the laws of Yahweh. There was nothing at all. It's only the evil God worship that has crept into the minds of people that make them think of these things. In Galatians 4. Galatians 4 here. It says, but when the appointed time, Galatians 4, verse 4. But when the appointed time had fully come, that is when Yahweh knew that these two people were ready to train this child to become the righteous servant of his begotten son. Then Yahweh sent forth his son. Now, not that he came forth from heaven, but it was time for him to come into existence, okay? Coming into existence from a woman, who, of course, was his mother, who was used to train. Remember all the scriptures and the sermons that Pastor gave about the importance of the mother training the child and so forth to bring him up. Now, notice this last part. Coming into existence under the law. You see that? Yeshua came into existence under the law. In other words, this was a lawful thing that took place. There was nothing, absolutely nothing that took place that was unlawful in the birth of Yeshua. And when no law was broken, it was a natural lawful birth. You know, Yosef was a just man. We know that. And the scriptures tells you that. In fact, the scriptures say that, you know, there's a lot of scriptures that show you that he was actually the son of Yosef, which the world refuses to believe, but nonetheless. In Luke 3:23 says, Yeshua himself, when he began his ministry, was about 30 years of age, being the son of Yosef, who was the son of Eli. Now, in some versions, they also have, I think in the King James, it says, the son of Yosef, it says, as was supposed, is in parentheses. But look up the word as, that word right there, it actually means according to the law. That it was done according to the law. He was lawfully his son. In Luke 4:22, now when Yeshua was reading the scriptures in the synagogues, the people knew who he was. It says, and they all could attest to his speech, but they were amazed that such beautiful words came from his mouth. And they said, is not this Yosef's son? They knew who he was. You know, the disciples knew and acknowledged that he was also. In Yochanan 1:45, remember, Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we have found him of whom Moshe and the law and the prophets wrote of, Yeshua of Nazareth, the son of Yosef. They knew who he was. They knew who he was. Yeshua was not the only one, of course, who believed scriptures, you know, but he was set apart at the time and being formed in his mother's womb, okay? Turn over to Galatians again. Oh, we're in Galatians. Turn over, flip over to verse 1, chapter 1, Galatians 1, and look at verse 15. Now, this is Yeshua that was writing this, and notice what he says. In Galatians 1, verse 15, but when it pleased Yahweh, who had set me apart from my mother's womb and called me out of his merciful blessings. You see that? He was called from his mother's womb. He was in the plan of Yahweh. Shaul realized that. Okay? And there were others born too. Look at Yeremiah. Remember the prophet Yeremiah in Yeremiah chapter 1. Yeremiah chapter 1. What's that? Yeremiah chapter 1, this is on page 573. Yeremiah chapter 1, look at verses 4 and 5. Yeremiah chapter 1, verses 4 and 5. Yeremiah chapter 1, verse 4 and 5, page 573. And then the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you, and I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. You see the similarity that is there, that we just saw with Yeshua, what we saw with the Apostle Shaul? This word formed, let me put this up for you. This word formed means, Brown, Driver, and Brick says it means to form or to fashion, referring to human activity or of Yahweh's activity. The formation of the servant of Yahweh, and that's what I want you to concentrate on, the formation of the servant of Yahweh, or the formation of an individual man. It also means the plan, like Yahweh's plan. It means to be predetermined or preordained, okay? And this is the same word that's used in Yahweh's last day's witness, as he was preordained by Yahweh before his birth, because the same example was used by Yahweh in reference to his witness, okay? Because many servants of Yahweh are called for, including our overseer. And you see here in the sixth book of Israel, chapter 15, Verse 24, he says, Yahweh must show you these things for you to understand. That's the reason I was trained from a child for this job in these last days. You see, he was trained from a child, like Yeshua was trained. Okay? I think I was trained before I was born from my mother's womb, where I heard the Bible read. It was an everyday thing in my house. The training started before I was born, just like Yeshua. I think of all the scriptures I have in my mind that have to be put together and combined in one ball to show that this prophecy has to be for right now in this time period. If I didn't know the scriptures describing these events before that and the things that go after that, I would never know the answers, and you wouldn't either. Okay? Look over to, real quick, Isaiah 49. Go back to Isaiah 49. Flip over a few pages. Isaiah 49, and of course, verse 1, verse 3, and verse 5 shows you, verse 1 shows you that he says, Yahweh called me, he says, listen, O isles and countries, listen, you people from afar. In verse 1, 49, verse 1, Yahweh has called me from the womb, from the bowels of my mother, he has made mention of my name. In verse 3, he says, you are my servant, O Israel, through whom I will be glorified. And in verse 5, he says, he formed me from the womb to be his servant. Okay? And that's really, that's actually what he's kind of speaking about in this, here in the 11th book of Israel, part 2, chapter 9, verse 70. He says, this is what Yahweh, your Redeemer, who formed you from the womb. Remember from the bowels of my mother, Yahweh spoke of me. It goes with this verse right here, formed. Formed you from the womb. Yahweh is the one who formed you from the womb, starting immediately and before I was born. Now, the same account is spoken of by of Yeshua Messiah, as well as we just read. And so I understand. Mother read the scriptures every night, and everything while I was in the womb. So formed you from the womb, says Yahweh, and he makes all things. Again, we find here, in the 11th book, in chapter 14, verse 11, Yahweh was getting me ready. He started the day I was born getting me ready. In fact, before I was born, the scriptures were getting being read to me in my mother's womb. That's also revealed in the Holy Scriptures. So you can see he's worked with me in training me to teach you the hidden things that the scholars have admitted that they can't understand, of course. You know, he knows it because why? He's been looking in the books, right? He's been studying the books. So we can see here that just like the prophet Yirmiah, the prophet Yirmiah brought the children of Israel out. He spoke to them about the captivity that they were in. In these last days, you know, the servant of Yahweh is speaking to us about the captivity that we're about to come out of. You know, and Yeshua's birth, the main point I want to show you is Yeshua's birth was preternatural. Israel Hawkins' birth was preternatural. Okay, think about it. Where are you going to find a one-year-old tell you your brother's name? You can't do it, right? This is only through Yahweh's inspiration that all these things have come to pass. To wrap up, please look at Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29, real fast. Proverbs 29, because this really pulls it all together. Proverbs 29, verse 21. Proverbs 29, verse 21, he says, he who carefully brings up his servant from childhood will have him as a son in the end. Bring up. Remember all the scriptures, the sermons that Pastor talked about being brought up, the servant, one who follows Yahweh, one who is brought up by him from childhood. You know, it takes a lot of preparation to do that. But he is called forth from his mother's womb, from the bowels of his mother, right? And notice, as a son, Yahweh's son in the end. It's a time period. It's the time period of the end that we're talking about. And so, Yahweh, when he calls forth his servants, he teaches them, he raises them up, and he brings them up. In these last days, he's brought us to the point to where Yeshua and Israel Hawkins works together. As it says in Amosha 3:3, you know, they come together, they are in agreement. And that's why this is the greatest work on the face of this earth. May Yahweh bless you. If you please stand. We'll turn it over for closing prayer.